I'd like now to welcome to the program Judith Lawson. She is a journalist. She is a member of the Occupy Santa Fe Media Working Group. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's a pleasure to be here.
So Occupy Santa Fe, along with Occupy Wall Street, Occupy every place else on planet Earth, it seems these days, is a movement that sprang up all over the place almost overnight. Here in Santa Fe, what happened? How did it begin? Where did it begin? Just give us, I mean, this is, we're documenting the history here of what may well turn out to be a very major movement.
It's moving so fast that forgive me if there are lapses in my knowledge of its history, because I came on board shortly after the first demonstration on the corner of the Paseo de Peralta and St. Francis. That was October 1st or 2nd?
Yeah.
So this Occupy Santa
Just
Fe,
a month. Yeah.
Just 1 month old. It's like a gangly colt. It's just got its legs under it, newborn. And it has come together with remarkable speed. The encampment, which is the physical manifestation of occupation that we have taken over, Santa Fe's beloved rail yard park, a beautiful park, a park many people treasure, a park with history and with ecological design built into it. And our encampment there is, on any given night, there are, I'd say, about 30 people sleeping in the probably 30-odd tents. We have a couple of guest tents. And a kitchen tent, a media tent, which just went up, which will be the hub of our communications. The donations have, from the generosity of Santa Feans, who are clearly ignited by this and thrilled, have been pouring in. We've opened accounts, both checking and savings, at Del Norte Credit Union.
As opposed to Bank of America.
As opposed to Bank of America or Wells Fargo or Citibank. And we are under the wing of a small nonprofit, so we do have 501c3 ability. And as I said, all kinds of donations have been pouring in, and we still need more because we're growing every day. Not exponentially yet, but pretty quickly.
What has been the kind of emotional or kind of motivational sense of the people who are down there occupying and who are supporting the group that's occupying?
Well, I'll backtrack just a little bit. There are, I'd call them a group, a core group of, now they really are facilitators, and they have all been to New York to occupy Wall Street.
Okay.
They're tremendously important because they hold the lineage. They call them the lineage holders. We have also had the privilege of having Ken Mayers of Veterans for Peace, who's occupying in Washington right now, has been to Wall Street and has been with Occupy Santa Fe at our rallies at the Roundhouse. And guidance from a couple of other people who is invaluable because they have the experience. Now, we are gaining hand over fist lots and lots of younger people who know that everything is wrong. Not just something is wrong, but everything is wrong. They can't find work. They are homeless. They are without resources. They have come out of the many kinds of abusive situations that young people are in our culture today. So we welcome them. We also have been welcoming. We have a huge learning process going on with a very large homeless population of Santa Fe. Every Occupy site has been welcoming homeless people. We must walk a very careful line because of alcoholism and drug use.
Right.
We have a clear agreement with the police that we won't tolerate anyone using drugs or alcohol on our site. And we have been kind, I'd say, with great kindness, I have seen, especially the men, some of whom have been in the military, enforcing that. And I heard the other night that the police are very happy because Rail Yard Park is much calmer and quieter since Occupy has come to
Isn't
set its
root. Isn't that interesting?
Isn't that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I find so fascinating about this movement in its manifestations all over the country, which seems so similar in each place, is that there is such a desire for, I mean, there have been these terrible incidents, like in Oakland, this young man getting his head shattered or really badly injured. But there's been basically a kind of atmosphere of let's work with the police, let's work with the city, let's work with each other. Let's not develop an us against them attitude, because it's all us, or it's 99%
us. 99%. Yeah. We are the 99%. And that is a very unifying expression of what this movement, this is becoming a movement. And as you've said, it's all across the country and all around the world now. We don't know much about what's happening in Asia, but certainly in Europe.
Yeah.
So there is a growing solidarity linked by the internet and all the social media, a great deal of communication. We've had people come and visit and stay with Occupy Santa Fe in just this 1 week, from Taos, from Española, from Albuquerque, from Oakland, from Austin. So Santa Fe being Santa Fe, and as the young occupier who I hoped would be with me today, Alex Delgado, has very eloquently put it, Santa Fe is geographically the highest capital in the country, and seen through the lens of its artistic and creative fame and population, it's also the highest in the country. So it's nice to have that sense of there's kind of a roiling, let's express ourselves through the arts and let's create this and that, combined with the multitude of all of us who are, let's say, over 25. I don't know. I mean, these are arbitrary numbers. Age has very little to do with this. But there are a lot of older folks who have some experience with the biggest protests in our recent history, Vietnam, civil rights movement. And also social workers who are extremely familiar with the challenges of the homeless in Santa Fe. The fact that there are between 1,200 and 1,500 homeless people in Santa Fe is, we think, enormously important. We would like to see an outpouring of what's needed, which is certainly a great deal of financial contribution to probably another shelter, more staff. The need is urgent and very great.
It's been said that the Occupy movements are creating microcosms of the society they'd like to have. And so you've got this kind of ethos of fairness and justice and food and sharing.
Compassion above all.
And compassion above all in this small scale, which is what you'd like to spread out. And I was looking at the Occupy Santa Fe Facebook site, and there was a quotation from a speech that somebody in one of the Occupy movements had given, and it said, I'm going to read this. It said, the World Health Organization lists six qualities that define a psychopath. One, callous unconcern for the feelings of others. Two, an ability to have enduring relationships. Three, reckless disregard for the safety of others. Four, deceitfulness, repeated lying and conning for profit. Five, inability to experience guilt. And six, failure to conform to social norms with respect to lawful behavior. And then the person makes the point that the CEOs are the heads of corporations that embody psychopathic personhood. And I read that. I thought, you know, there we have it.
There we have it. Now that was a speech. Now, given this is the human mic technique of speech making, by Elizabeth Christine, who is the founder of the Transition Towns movement, a kind of umbrella in Santa Fe. And she then wrote an article off of that, which is on the front of the Broadside, the two-page newspaper of which I am editor, the New Mexico Broadside. But it could hardly be said more succinctly and vividly. There was a film, I think it might have been made 8 or 10 years ago, called The Corporation, in which Harvard Medical School psychiatrists and psychologists evaluated the corporation, and these are the characteristics that they saw, that they found. So there we have it. A corporation in our time is a psychopathic entity.
And it doesn't have to be that way.
No, that's not what they were in the beginning.
I think that it's important, I mean, when making distinctions about what's wrong and what's right, to really delve into those distinctions. I mean, what's wrong is that psychopathic attitude, and in many ways that goes back to what is necessitated by an infinite growth model. And we talk about this over
yes.
and over in terms of economies and you know, how it's not natural within ecosystems to have infinite growth, but somehow in economies we expect this.
Yeah.
But I think it's also important to talk about how it is possible to have corporations providing all sorts of wonderful things that we need. I mean, look at what you're wearing. Look at what I'm wearing. Look at what's on our feet. Look at, you know, look at what vitamins we
look
took
at
just
equipment
this morning.
Using.
The mixer that is in front of me here, the headphones that we have on, every single one of these made by a corporation and shipped in a truck to Santa Fe somehow or other. And to think about and really discuss very seriously how those things could be done in a way that is fair and just.
Well, you probably know, and I believe it was Tom Hartman who just last week identified, I saw him on a program where he had gotten his hands on a book that has the closest real history of how corporations came to be what they are today. It began in the 1820s, and there were sort of backroom decisions made by the Supreme Court, which was nothing like the court of today, and then culminating in the Citizens United decision. But corporate personhood has been growing like an evil fungus. It's almost, it's Halloween, so I can talk that way, you know, an evil fungus. And it is, it's a system. What you can see when you pull back and use your long lens is that this is a system that has required, increasingly required, the people who are its managers, its executives, its employees, and I think something like 100 million Americans work for corporations. That's a lot of us. That's a third of us. The requirement is that you become part of a corporate culture, and the corporate culture has become increasingly rapacious because you can't satisfy the appetite of endless growth and profits and ever higher profits for shareholders. Boards of directors and primary shareholders are a very small number of people. That's what the 1% really is.
We're talking to Judith Lawson of Occupy Santa Fe. So let's go back to Santa Fe. What is the camp like? Are you using solar power? I saw a call for bikes to have bicycle-generated electricity, things like that. What does it look like?
Well, as of last night, we'd had two generators donated, the use of those, because we have to use a generator for just a few things until our solar installation goes in. I think it's Randy, I'll say his name wrong, but of Positive Energy, Randy Sedgwick, I think. One of the solar guys who's been around for a long time. He's donating all the components. We're looking for someone who will donate the batteries. We need a bank of, it's either 4 or 6, deep charge batteries, golf cart batteries, basically. And then we're set, because we don't need much. We need a couple of lights for the kitchen. And for our media center, we need to be able to run maybe 2-3 laptops at a time and a couple of lights. It's really not much. So a solar panel's perfect.
Do you plan to stay all through the winter?
As far as I can tell, Mary Charlotte, we are here in Rail Yard Park for the duration, indefinitely.
It's so interesting to me to observe this, because for years I have been watching people, listening to them, interviewing them about their concerns, dissatisfactions, and fears with this society that we live in, and above all, certainly from my point of view, not only the economic but the environmental concerns. I mean, you know, making your planet uninhabitable for human life and a whole lot of other life is no joke, and it's not something to be politicized or taken as something we can deal with 10 years from now or 20 years from now or something like that. And everybody's worried about it, and nobody has known what to do, and everybody's talking about, well, I'm signing petitions and I'm writing letters and all this. And suddenly these Occupy movements are springing up everywhere, and the metaphor from nature that comes to mind about that is crystallization.
Yes.
So you have all these molecules floating around, and suddenly they coalesce into a crystal very rapidly, and that crystal has a structure, and that structure is consistent throughout.
Another beautiful metaphor is the caterpillar cocoon to butterfly. In the cocoon phase, which is terribly ugly, and there's nothing much in there but mush, as far as we know, there is something called the imaginal buds of the new life that is the butterfly. There are many, many examples in nature of just what we're talking about, and I totally agree with you that this is what we're seeing and feeling and experiencing on every level. It's just, whoom, all coming together and blooming. Timing must be right, and we have, you know, we're humans. We don't really have any say over the timing of things.
Yeah, and at this moment, for whatever reason it happened, one of the things which we talked about yesterday with Merle Lefkoff, as we talked about Occupy Wall Street, is the importance of this movement becoming staying nonviolent.
Yeah.
Is that a challenge? That seems to be just the one of the basics that everybody is adhering to?
It's a challenge in a way that I hadn't anticipated, and this is how it looks. To be nonviolent is a discipline. It's a cultivated discipline because we are all coming from a violent culture where the language is violent, the images are violent. We're surrounded by a lot of forms of violence. Santa Fe's been fortunate to have Marshall Rosenberg come and teach nonviolent communication at least two or three times. And there are people here who are well-versed and practiced. It's more than communication. There are so many people coming into camp who something in them has just given way, and they have to vomit up their anger, their angst, their pain, their fear. And we're beginning to understand how we have to make a place for that. Just as in certain indigenous traditions, you dig a hole in Mother Earth and you vomit your stuff into that hole and cover it up and ask the earth to heal it and take it. So we're working with that. We have a lot of very skilled people amongst us who have great understanding of things like co-counseling, you know, simple ways.
Right, right. So instead of putting a bowling ball through a bank window,
yeah,
you work with it internally.
Internally.
Which is also a kind of a sign of the maturity of this movement compared to, say, what was happening 30 years ago.
Yeah. Although I did read that in San Francisco, some guy in the Occupy San Francisco movement stood up, and he was, you know, probably stoned and drunk, and said, "We're just having a party. This is just about a party."
Yeah, this, well, that's San Francisco.
That's San Francisco, but Occupy Santa Fe is not about having a party. It's about we're beginning to understand a mission here.
How do you, so far, and again, you know, talking about the gradual emergence of this movement and not trying to force it any faster than it is and so on, but how do you understand that mission so far?
Well, the mission so far, again, we only need 50 feet of light on the path ahead of us. We really can't see that far ahead. But learning how, we'll call it consensus democracy. It's 9/10 consensus. We're following the Wall Street model, which has evolved too. But this kind of whole self participatory democracy, which where you're present rather than being represented, it's very experimental. We haven't ever done this in the U.S. before as a people, and we are experimenting with it. So that, I'd say, is the first phase. And then we begin. Now we have working groups that have broken out. I believe Occupy Santa Fe has almost 20 working groups. Things such as inclusiveness, tremendously important in our multi-ethnic, multi-racial town. And ideas and possible, you know, people really reading and going deep into the current literature, not so much the past literature, because this is something different.
Yeah.
So within the working groups, proposals come forward, and then they're presented to the General Assembly. And if they're not wholly acceptable, after a lot of discussion usually, then they have to go back to the drawing board and come back with it or not come back with it. So it's an evolving process that it feels like it's always in motion. It feels like we're swimming in a lot of water here in the desert.
Ultimately, there will have to be a movement that has the result of a much, much, much stronger environmental protection than what we have so far, and basically people and biological life on Earth-centered rather than profit-centered. Not that the two are absolutely mutually exclusive, mind you, if we have a clean energy economy, that's an economy and so on, but basically that has to be life-centered, and that's a big job.
Life-centered. The economy that we have, and mind you, it's a broken economy. Some time ago, the financial economy split from the Main Street economy. That was very easy to see, I thought, maybe 2-3 years ago. And we are coming to the place where that is not sustainable at all. I mean, finance, its relationship to economy. Economy comes from an old Greek word which means household, household affairs.
Right, right.
And I'm going to go back for a moment to our friend Charles Eisenstein, who is, even though he doesn't live here, he's come to Santa Fe many times, and his new book, Sacred Economics, speaks directly to what we all really want. We want a good and decent life. We want a good and decent life for all the others. And the honoring of all sentient forms of life. I'm speaking as a Buddhist with a small b, but this is the truth.
Right.
This is what we want in our hearts. And right there in Occupy Camp, in our campsite, I ask anyone to come and visit us, please, and you'll feel the beating heart of the movement there.
Judith Lawson is a journalist. She's a member of the Occupy Santa Fe Media Working Group, and Occupy Santa Fe is on the web at
OccupySantaFeNM.org.
Judith, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at KSFR.org, podcasting at SantaFeRadioCafe.org, thanks to Doubtfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at Facebook.com/RadioCafe, and my email address is RadioCafe@KSFR.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.